You're listening to the MLB Pipeline Podcast with your host, Ed Randall.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, and welcome to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast. I'm joined by our draft and minor league experts, Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis. First things first, Howie Kendrick goes on the disabled list with a strained left hamstring for the Dodgers. And to replace him on the roster, they call up Jose Peraza. He was acquired by Los Angeles from Atlanta in that three-team deal the day before the trade deadline and was hitting .385 in 10 games at AAA Oklahoma City. At age 21, he is the youngest position player called up since Adrian Beltre got the call at age 19. Jonathan, what about Peraza?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's, you know, I thought one of the best things about that trade, as we've broken down on this podcast, in fact, is that the Dodgers not only got all that big league talent, but they got the best prospect in the deal in Peraza. And, you know, now I didn't know that they were going to get a chance to see what he could do so quickly. But, you know, he's shown enough in the AAA level. He can hit, he can get on base, and he can run. And he's a, you know, he's a solid second baseman. He's a guy who probably could play shortstop if you needed him to. So he's going to be a very good defensive second baseman. He had started playing some in the outfield in Atlanta, but I think, you know, he'll be a very capable fill-in for as long as Howie Kendrick is out for. And I thought at the very least he'd be a September call to help him off the bench, pinch run, things of that nature. And now they'll get a little bit more of a return on their investment from that trade sooner than they thought they would.
Yeah, and the nice thing about Peraza is that he makes contact. You know, this isn't like a big slugger with some swing and miss. You know, not to pick up using Joey Gallo as an example, where you wonder, and we saw with Joey Gallo when he kept to the Rangers. You know, hit some home runs, but also struck out a lot and wasn't really consistent at the plate. Peraza puts the bat on the ball. I think he'll be able to hold his own. We saw his speed last night with the triple. He's probably actually a little bit of a defensive upgrade on Howie Kendrick. You know, I think the Dodgers are going to make the playoffs regardless, but I don't think they're going to lose a whole lot with him in the lineup. They're not going to ask him to do too much, and I think he'll be able to put the ball in play, you know, run a little bit and play solid defense.
Were either of you surprised that Atlanta gave him up in that trade? Jonathan?
You know, I am still trying to wrap my head around a little bit about the Braves side of that trade, you know, across the board. You know, not that they gave up big league pieces necessarily, but, you know, what they got in return. They really like Olivera, obviously, and that was the price they had to pay. I got the sense that, I don't want to say that Peraza's star had faded because that would be unfair, but I don't know that he was necessarily thought of as that, obviously wasn't thought of as that untradeable prospect anymore. And given the, you know, a little bit of a logjam at the big league level, I guess they thought he was more expendable than maybe I thought heading into the year.
Yeah, I was surprised, Ed, I guess just from the standpoint of you look at all the trades that John Hart and company have made since he got there, and it's been acquiring young players. In this trade, they gave up Alex Wood, who's a young big league starter who's had success, and they gave up Peraza. They obviously really liked Hector Olivera a lot, especially with the Dodgers paying about half the price tag. And I do think the emergence of Ozzy Albies in the Braves system, I think maybe internally he might have passed Peraza in terms of who the Braves thought was going to be their, you know, be the better long-term player. And so I guess maybe in the Braves' mind, they felt like they were selling a little bit high on Peraza, that he'd maybe become a little redundant, and they really liked Hector Olivera.
To another subject. First, Minnesota center fielder Byron Buxton, their top prospect, batted .289 in Double-A before being called up to great fanfare in June. He batted .189 before spraining his left thumb. Then he was sent to AAA to rehab, and the Twins have now decided to keep him there. Are you guys surprised by that, and when do you think we'll see him in the major leagues again, Jonathan?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, I was surprised he got called up the first time, and I think they're maybe realized that they were a little premature and maybe a little reactionary, you know, based on seeing all these other, you know, tremendous prospects being called up. And they felt, they thought he could help them. But this is a guy who's missed a lot of time. You know, Jim and I have talked about his injuries kind of ad nauseum on the site, on the network, wherever. They're not related. I don't think there's any long-term concerns. But there's no question he's missed a lot of development time. So the fact that he jumped from Double-A to the big leagues when he did was a little surprising. So, I think this is the right move. Let him stay down there. Let him finish out the minor league season, then bring him back up in September. Maybe he'll have a couple of weeks worth, of at bats at AAA and get some success under him again, and then he can help them out, for that stretch run in the last month of the season if they want. But I think given the amount of time that he missed and the lack of immediate success, which is not so surprising, nor is it alarming in any way to me. It makes sense to let him stay down in AAA and get his feet back under him.
And I think part of the reason they called him up at the time, too, Aaron Hicks was hurt. They were in contention, hard spot. They were playing very well, and they hoped to kind of keep that ball rolling. Buxton got hurt. As Jonathan said, his development has been accelerated. I was surprised enough. They did. The thing to remember is this guy has not even spent 100 games at any level in the leagues. The most he's spent anywhere, 87 games in high class A, parts of two seasons, end of 2013 and part of 2014. He had never played in AAA before they just sent him back down. So, there's still development work to be done. He only had 37 at-bats in the big leagues anyway, which is not enough to read much of anything into. Struck out 15 times. So he was flailing a little bit, but I'm not concerned by it, not surprised to send him down. And, I think he's 5 for 12. Obviously, that's a small sample size, but if he continues to just tear up AAA, I think we'll see him back pretty quickly.
Where do you guys rank him in terms of him being perhaps the top prospect in the game? Jonathan?
Yeah, he's still number one. There's no real reason to move him off, both based on who might be behind him and his tools. Jim, what's the line you said? The tools are the tools, and you can't argue with them.
We're still talking about a guy whose worst tool is probably his power, and we're projecting him as a 20 to 25 home run guy. It is the best all around minor league tools since Mike Trout, and if you were just grading tool for tool at the time, Buxton might have come out ahead because his throwing arm is significantly better than Trout's. And I'm not saying he's going to be Mike Trout, but that's the kind of upside he has. And, I think about it. I still like him better than Corey Seager with the Dodgers or Lucas Giolito with the Nationals. I will admit, if we knew everything we knew now and they were still eligible as prospects, I would put Carlos Correa ahead of Buxton. And I would... it's tough. It's tough with the tools. I would probably put Chris Bryant ahead of Buxton, too. So those guys still counted. We had them right behind Buxton. But, I would put Correa ahead of him for sure, and I would think seriously about Bryant.
In an otherwise dismal year, the Cuban import, Yoan Moncada, is giving Red Sox fans something to smile about. And maybe, Jim, they're beginning to get their money's worth.
Yeah, I think they are. This is a guy who signed with a lot of fanfare, $31.5 million bonus. The way the international rules work, he's young enough, you can't give him big league contracts. So he got the largest bonus ever for an amateur player, almost by double. He got $31.5 million. The Red Sox had to pay in a matching penalty, so it's a $63 million acquisition. And, we're talking about great all-around tools. He might have the best tools in the minors, except for Byron Buxton. He could be plus hitter, plus power, well above average runner, plus arm, more of an average second baseman. And, the Red Sox have brought him along very slowly. It's easy to forget with Moncada, I think, that he's only 20. He didn't turn 20 until the end of May. They didn't debut him. He didn't make his debut. They kept him in extended spring training for about a month and sent him to low class A. They're not going to rush him. And really his first full month in the minors, he hit .216 and without much power and, ran a little bit. And so I think people were wondering, okay, what's going on here? But in July he heated up. He hit .316. He stole 13 bases. He hit four homers. He's hitting .400 in August. He's already got 11 steals in seven games. I think he stole 8 bases last week. He's been running wild. And, we're talking about a 20-year-old kid who in 62 games and in low class A, one of the younger guys in the league, is hitting .286 with 23 extra base hits and 33 steals, and he's drawing walks and, maybe needs to make a little bit more consistent contact, but I think he's been exactly what people thought he was going to be.
Jonathan?
Yeah, I think one of the things that, and it's not his fault, is that I think baseball fans in general are accustomed to Cuban defectors – being the Jorge Soler, Yasiel Puig, guys who get to the big leagues in a hurry. I mean, Soler even took quote-unquote longer because he spent more time in the minors, but you know, more often than not, they're older and they're closer to being big league ready, so there's that more immediate, okay, what's this guy about at the highest level, as opposed to, boy, this guy got a big contract, and now he's got to go through the whole development process, you know, as if he were a, you know, a guy drafted out of high school or junior college or, you know, whatever. And there's probably a little impatience. And, you know, add to the fact that he started slowly, that didn't help. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with everything that Jim said. I mean, he is an exciting combination of tools. The power will continue to come. And the fact that not only has he stolen 33 bases, and he did have 8 steals last week. He was our second baseman on our prospect team of the week, largely because of that. He had 4 straight 2-steal games. He's only been caught 3 times all year. And that, I think, bodes well for future success. You know, sometimes you'll see guys who like to run a lot and have plus speed, and they don't really know what to do with it, and they get thrown out at a higher percentage than they probably should, and that usually speaks to them needing to learn how to read pitchers and things of that nature and get better jumps. But it looks like he's already way ahead of the curve in terms of that.
Jonathan, stay with me. Let's talk about draftees that are off to good starts. Let's look at hitters now. We'll take a look at pitchers next week. Give us a thumbnail sketch, if you would.
Yeah, you know, I've got a story coming on that very topic tomorrow. So still in the beginning stages of it, but I think, you know, a couple of guys that sort of stand out. One is probably the best first rounder. Is Taylor Ward, who was also the biggest surprise of a first-rounder. You know, most people, including Jim and I, didn't have him projected nearly that high, Fresno State catcher. And he's gone out, and listen, he's performed about as well as you could ask for, you know, in a pro debut. And, yeah, it's just a small sample size, but he's already moved past short-season ball and gone to full-season ball. And he's got a 942 OPS, which is the best among all the first rounders, you know, offensive players hitting 355. He's also got 5 steals. So he's off to a good start. To Brian Hayes, I'll stick to the first round guys who have done really well. With Brian Hayes, that's Charlie's kid, off to a very good start in the Gulf Coast League, hitting 375. And then Trent Clark, the Brewers first round pick, he's at 317. Slugging 463, he's got 12 steals in his debut in the Arizona League. So there's a few guys still piecing things together, and obviously it's a small amount of playing time, but I think any time a guy can go out and just as he's getting his feet wet can put up some good numbers, at least for a confidence boost, it's a good thing.
We'll look at the pitchers with you next week. Jim, the 8th annual Under Armour Games, 4 p.m. Saturday on Wrigley Field. You can follow it on MLB.com, and what can we look forward to?
Yeah, this is one of the highlights of the summer showcase circuit. It'll be televised. I'll be part of the broadcast team with Paul Severino on MLB Network, and what I like about it, it's kind of a sneak peek at coming attractions for the draft. I mean, we've had, you know, this is the 8th annual game. I think there have been, I want to say, 60 first-round and supplemental first-round picks that have come out of the game, you know, obviously all from the high school side, so that's an impressive number. You know, we were talking about Byron Buxton earlier in the podcast. He was in the Under Armour game. He was in the Under Armour game just 4 years ago, and you know, the first one at Wrigley, I'm doing a quick count here, was I think there have been 11 big leaguers from that game alone. And, you know, this number is going to continue to grow because these guys are, you know, a lot of these guys are just getting their careers started. But we've seen guys like Zach Wheeler, Addison Russell, Lance McCullers. You could go on, but it's an impressive list. And, you know, once again this year, we're going to see some top talent. I think, you know, Jonathan and I were kind of kicking around the names who are going to be there. I think the 3 best players in the game from a prospect standpoint are Riley Pint, a Kansas high school right-hander. He's, you know, he has a chance to go very high in the draft. He could be a top 5 pick, mid-90s fastball, good breaking ball, projectable 6'4" frame. I think the top position player in the draft is a kid named Will Benson, a Georgia high school outfielder. He's 6'6", 220, left-handed, looks the part. You know, if this guy, if everything happens for him at the plate, I mean, you could have a guy with big power, hits for solid average. And another guy, another pitcher to watch, a Georgia product, Alex Spies. he's built along the lines of Riley Pyne, electric arm, another mid-90s guy. Not quite as polished as Riley Pyne, but if he puts everything together, I think you're looking at a potential mid-first-round pick next year.
Jonathan, this is such a great showcase.
Yeah, no, it really is. And, I mean, Brendan Rodgers played in it a year ago, just to give you an idea. I remember it was really, in a lot of ways, Brandon Nimmo's coming out party, the Mets prospect. He had had a good summer and got invited kind of last minute to go and ended up being one of the MVPs of the game, and that really put him on the map, which helped him, you know, because we went back to Wyoming and didn't have a high school team, so it was a little hard to evaluate him. So it was based on those kinds of experiences. I'll throw a couple names out, you know, that Jim didn't mention, and there are a lot of good players in this one, but the two guys, if you're looking for defense, one is Cooper Johnson, who's a catcher, maybe the best defensive catcher, in fact, he is the best defensive catcher in this draft. If you want to think Austin Hedges, I don't know if he's quite that level, Lucas Herbert from last year's draft, top high school defenders. And then a guy who a lot of scouts mentioned to me from the East Coast Pro Showcase, which ended not that long ago, he ended up in my sort of others of note beyond the top 10 is Delvin Perez, is a shortstop from Puerto Rico. Really, really good shortstop. Didn't play all that well at the East Coast Showcase in terms of his performance, but scouts really like him. And in general, it's looking like a much better crop from Puerto Rico than we've seen in a few years. So that should be exciting to watch as well. So just a couple more names from, you know, for the game that's coming up this weekend.
So the programming note, the 8th annual Under Armour Games, 4 p.m. Eastern, Saturday at Wrigley Field, and you can follow it here on MLB.com. Guys, great to be with you as always. On behalf of Jonathan Mayo and Jim Callis, I'm Ed Randall. Thanks so much for listening to the MLB.com Pipeline Podcast.